news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
Okay, thank you so much for tuning in. This is my last live hour on Saturday morning, at least for the time being. iHub is going to go to all podcasts, and some of them won't be that long. They may be like a 20-minute segment on one topic, and there may be more than one being put up every week. And during this hour, I will again tell you how to find me after this morning. Right now, I want to talk about the president. I wasn't sure how I was even going to say that, so I paused and decided to be respectful. What is the matter with this man? I mean, seriously. I saw you know how they make fun of the way he stands? When he stands up supposedly straight, he's actually leaning at almost a 45-degree angle forward from his hips. His legs are down straight, but his body is leaning forward as if that gut he's got is pulling him over. Well, somebody put up a picture of for those of you who don't know, I've been very involved for a long time in issues surrounding dementia and end-of-life choices, things like that. And there are over 40 different kinds of dementia. Alzheimer's is just the one we're most familiar with, and it may be the most prolific, but nevertheless, there are lots of other kinds of dementia, and each kind has its own impact on the body. Well, there is one form of dementia that, in fact, one of the symptoms is standing in that position that the president is always standing in. And I have been saying for a long time that much of what I see as somewhat dysfunctional behavior on the part of the president looks to me, and I'm not a doctor, but looks to me like early dementia symptoms. He's stumbling. He's shaky. He can't read. His brain does not process well. I've joked often about the 20 things that he has managed to memorize, and he just keeps running through a remix of his greatest hits all the time. And I'm sure that's what he's going to do on the stage in Tulsa. He says things that are ridiculous. He said, for example, this past week, well, if we stopped testing right now, we'd have very few virus cases, if any. Our testing is so much bigger and more advanced than any other country. We've done a great job on this. It shows more cases. The fact that we do more testing means we find more cases. It doesn't create cases. Now, some politicians are saying, well, of course the number of virus cases is going up. That's what happens when you test more people. You find more infections. But for example, in Florida, the number of tests they conducted per day was unchanged, but the average number of cases more than doubled. If they were only finding more cases through more testing, without more people actually getting sick, then the number of people showing up at hospitals would be steady. And it's not. The number of people showing hospitals is going up. And how, you may ask, and legitimately it's a good question, how did the idea of a virus and wearing a mask to protect yourself, how did that get politicized? Well, you have a president who should be leading the nation in doing what is the most sensible, safest thing to do going forward. He won't wear a mask because I think he thinks it makes him look weak. Personally, I think the fact that he makes a big deal out of not wearing a mask makes him look weak. But he actually said This is a direct quote from this past week. People wear masks to show they don't support me. What an ass. Everything really is not about you. It's the same way that this book that John Bolton is, that's going to hit the stands this week big time and is already number one on Amazon, which the president helped to make it that. But John Bolton has written this book about his 18 months or 14 months that he was national security advisor to the president, appointed by the president. And the president and Attorney General Barr, his personal lawyer, obviously, because he sure isn't acting on behalf of the American people, they tried to stop publication of the book, even though Bolton did submit it for review to the intelligence agency. He sat down and went through days of page by page redactions that they wanted because they claimed there were some things that could be considered classified. He did all of that. He was told they were done, but he didn't get an official, yes, you may publish the book. So, of course, the president and attorney general went to court to try and stop him from being able to release the book because it has a lot of things in there that are pretty damn embarrassing for the president. President said, oh, Bolton is a liar. He's a loser. It's the same thing he says about all the people he ends up firing after he hired them when they realize that he's not such a great person to work for, and they end up quitting or they end up saying public things that he doesn't like and they end up getting fired. Well, a judge just said that they cannot block the release of Bolton's book. So now what they're going to do is go after the money he got for writing the book. Because after all, when all else fails, go after the money. Now, we have the right, and we have always considered that we had the right in the past to know about the health of the people who sit in the Oval Office. And in the past, there have been times when we didn't know, and we were not happy about that afterwards. John F. Kennedy had real serious back problems and had to take shots and drugs and whatever. We didn't really know about that. Franklin Roosevelt had polio, for God's sake. And the people really did not see that until near the end of his fourth term because we always saw him sitting down, not in a wheelchair. We have the right to know about the health of a president, especially when we have two people in their mid to late 70s running for president. The president, Donald Trump, is 74 years old, and some say he's having some serious problems that are noticeable. Like when he holds a glass of water up to drink, he either is afraid we will see his right hand shake, or he cannot raise his hand up far enough to get it to his mouth. He uses his left hand as a brace on the bottom of the glass to get it to his mouth. He's done it on more than one occasion, and it is cause for concern. Maybe he has Parkinson's disease and doesn't want us to see his hand shake. Meanwhile, former Vice President Joe Biden, who will be Trump's opponent, is 77 years old. Now, I have to admit, I'm at the age where I don't think that's necessarily old. I'm at the point now where I think 90 is old. The Trump campaign has been trying to show that Biden is a doddering old man, way too forgetful to be president. In fact, it's the same thing that they did try to do to Hillary Clinton, whose stamina was called into question by the president. Meanwhile, He couldn't walk 700 yards when he was at the Group of Seven leaders in Sicily a couple years ago. They all walked across an area about 700 yards to take a photo op of all of the Group of Seven leaders together. He had to go by golf cart. Look, as we age, we all forget stuff. We all misspeak now and then. Joe Biden is very cautious because he grew up a stutterer. He's very cautious about the words he chooses, and occasionally his mouth doesn't keep up with how fast his mind is going, and he stumbles over his words. So does Donald Trump, who doesn't answer questions if they don't relate to one of the 20 things he has memorized. After 8 years as vice president and 36 years in the Senate, Joe Biden could have forgotten half of what he knows and still have a better grip on policy and on the world than Donald Trump. Robin Abkarian, writing in the LA Times, said, "I'll take common decency and empathy over cruelty and narcissism any day. I'll take a candidate who believes that Black Lives Matter, that reproductive choice is critical, someone who wants all Americans to have access to health care and the voting booth, and who doesn't fawn over dictators." Hear, hear. I certainly agree. I would rather have somebody who at least knows how government works and is willing to use it effectively for policy outcomes that I personally tend to agree with. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, the news paying attention to Donald Trump today, which he loves. The more controversial, the better, because it means it'll be carried by all the news stations. He's holding this rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where the number of cases in the state of Oklahoma and in Tulsa, the number of virus cases has leaped up. And he was going to hold it yesterday on Juneteenth, and he had the gall, to say that he had made Juneteenth something to be aware of. Just because he wasn't aware of it, and the people around him, all those white old men who don't know anything about the real world, none of them knew what Juneteenth was. He thinks he made it popular. He made it known. That's ridiculous. I spent 10 long years living in Dallas, Texas. Let me tell you, in Texas, they know what Juneteenth means, because it was 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation when the news finally reached Texas that the slaves were free. And for that 2.5 years, Texas didn't let them know. That's why Juneteenth is so important. You're listening to iHub Radio. This is Anita Rufus.
Live from Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
So I want to give you a definition of fascism, because I think it's very appropriate to think about what that word means in relation to the kinds of actions that the president is taking and the kinds of things he says out loud. Fascism is a form of far-right, authoritarian, ultra-nationalism that is characterized by dictatorial power, forcible suppression of opposition, and strong regimentation of society and of the economy. That's what fascism is. The Antifa people, who who the far right is always saying, oh, those are the ones causing all of the uproar and doing looting. And it turns out that that's not true. And law enforcement has made it clear that it is far right and white supremacists that are causing most of the problems at these protests, which have primarily been very peaceful, except for the fact that they are tearing down Confederate statues. But fascism is something to oppose, and this president has been heading in the direction that could be described as fascist. This rally he's holding in Tulsa, he warned protesters this is going to be different. He said any protesters, anarchists, agitators, looters, or lowlifes who are going to Oklahoma need to understand they will not be treated like they've been treated in New York or Seattle or Minneapolis. No, I'm sure that including the concept of protesters, those who have been legitimately, constitutionally protected, being out there, letting their voices be heard, and assembling in public as the Constitution allows them to do. Those are not people who are supposed to be subject to law enforcement or flash bombs or pepper spray. Now, in addition, he seems to not realize that in New York, in Seattle, in Minneapolis, and lots of other cities across the country, police have been treating peaceful protesters violently. And in fact, some police officers have either been suspended or fired. Tulsa had instituted a curfew since they couldn't get the president not to come to Tulsa. He at least changed the date from Juneteenth to today. But the Supreme Court of the state of Oklahoma would not require that people attending his rally had to follow the health department protocols of wearing masks. So they're handing masks out to people as they go into the arena, but they don't have to wear them. It's all optional. Except that they all had to sign a waiver saying, well, if they did get sick, they wouldn't sue the president or his campaign. So he selected one of the most controversial locations because of this is the 99-year anniversary of one of the worst racial massacres ever to take place in this country in Tulsa. And it's just like rubbing our nerves that are already raw from staying at home and worrying about the virus and people protesting in the streets and the fear of getting sick and the anger at the need to express outrage at what has been going on, particularly with regard to race in this country. 60% of white Americans and 82% of black Americans think that Trump has made the country more divided. And in fact, in 2019, 55% of white Americans disagreed with the way Trump handled race relations. In 2019, it was 55%. Most recently, Associated Press poll, it was 62%. And optimism, even among Republicans, is down. Trump's numbers are not good. And as a result, his reelection is not assured at all. He is now positioning himself much the way that Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon did, as representing the silent majority. the spokesperson for voters resisting cultural change, ready to ride any backlash from the protests, calling for racial equality and police reform. The silent majority is stronger than ever before, Trump tweeted, aligning himself with those who believe their voices are missing from the national dialogue. Meanwhile, a CBS News poll showed that 82% of Americans believe gay people should be protected, and 85% say the Dreamers should be given legal status. So who's out of touch, for God's sake? This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. You're listening to iHub Radio.
Because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, again, I appreciate you listening. I've been here on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon live. This will be my last live show for a while because we're going to all podcasts here at iHub Radio. And just very quickly, I will tell you that this means you can now listen on your schedule rather than mine. We may be doing more than one episode a week. Some of them will be shorter, maybe 20, 30 minutes instead of 2 hours. And wherever you access podcasts, you can find us. Or you can go to iHubRadio.com, scroll down the right side of the homepage, and click on my show and get the podcast that way. We will continue to live stream lots of news and talk and entertainment content. It's just going to be a listen when you want to rather than when we're telling you we're here. And so many people are now listening to podcasts rather than appointment radio. So this is probably a good positive thing for us to be doing right now. We're in the stream of things. Big news this week, Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota withdrew herself from consideration to be the vice presidential running mate for Joe Biden. And she said she told him that he should pick a woman of color, that would be the best way to show that the Democratic Party is not only ready to move forward, but that Joe Biden is in tune with the times rather than the old man that the Trump people are trying to turn him into, as if Trump wasn't an old man. I also want to share something very quickly with you about the 2020 election, which is concerning, and you need to be aware of it. Russian social media accounts are now amplifying what is an American-made conspiracy theory about the COVID-19 virus, that it is a bioweapon, that it was produced in a lab, which has now been totally discounted, but that it is being used by China to try and wipe out the rest of the world, especially America, as if it wasn't our own president's lack of leadership that has led to how serious the virus is in this country. Russian trolls have now concluded that it's easier to identify divisive content from real Americans and spread it rather than trying to create their own material. There's one guy who was interviewed, he wouldn't give his name, but he describes himself as an information warfare expert. And he said the Kremlin doesn't need to make fake news anymore. It's all American made. So there was an app from a company called Shadow Inc., which was attributed. Remember when Hillary's campaign was taken to the cleaners for supposedly tampering with Bernie Sanders' results from the primaries in Iowa? Well, it turns out that that was based on this app from this company called Shadow Inc., which is a Russian troll. This is just a sliver of the kind of misinformation that is pouring onto social media platforms. In 2016, the Kremlin-backed organization called Internet Research Agency was identified by our intelligence authorities as having interfered in the presidential election. Russians who worked for that group stole the identities of American citizens and spread horrible messages on Facebook and other social media platforms. And their goal was to stoke all kinds of discord on race and religion and other issues that might influence voters. Russian trolls have learned it's far more effective to find our sore spots and amplify them based on content from Americans than it is to spin out their own conspiracy theories. And that comes from a former CIA analyst. So when you see things, somebody you know posts an article, even if it looks like it's from a legitimate source, don't go by the headline that is posted. Open the article and look to see, where did it run? Who wrote it? When did it run? This happened to me just this past week. Somebody posted something up on Facebook, and I thought, my God, is that true? So I opened the article, and sure enough, it's an article that was written like 4 years ago. It's no longer relevant. And so in the comments section under my friend's posting, I put, do you realize this article is 4 years old? And my friend sent back, no, I didn't check. So you need to check before you just go ahead and share things that other people have put up. Now, this week was an interesting one. You know how I feel about the courts. I love the fact that we have a system of law. Having studied the law, I just love it. And I believe in it. I don't always agree with the decisions they make. But the Supreme Court this past week ruled 6-3 that existing federal law forbids job discrimination on the basis of either sexual orientation or transgender status. And the majority opinion was written by none other than Neil Gorsuch, the very conservative justice that Trump put on the court. So now, Congress needs to rethink whether they want to seriously embody in the law new rules regarding health care, adoption by gay couples. But the court said Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which did make it illegal for employers to discriminate because of a person's sex, that also covers sexual orientation and transgender status. Thank you, Neil Gorsuch. Even the most objectionable justice, once they get up there, and they're going to sit there for life, what we want is for them to evaluate every case that comes before them based on the Constitution, not based on their own preferences or their own politics. Meanwhile, an Equality Act that would have amended the civil rights bills pertaining to employment and housing and public accommodations and serving on a jury in education and federal programs by adding the terms sexual orientation and gender identity to the list of protected classes, especially based on that landmark decision from the Supreme Court, a bipartisan group of senators on Wednesday called on Mitch McConnell to bring that Equality Act up for a vote. But one senator is still holding it up. And that's how the Senate works. The Supreme Court also said that the administration, in trying to get rid of protection for Dreamers, the young people who were brought here by parents who came illegally, and therefore the children came illegally, but they have grown up here, they work here, they've gone to school here, they are American in every sense of the word, but they were subject, under this president's ruling, they were subject to deportation. Well, the same Supreme Court said, you know what? You didn't do it right. We're not saying that DACA can or cannot exist, but you didn't do it right. And so the Dreamers at least have a little bit longer sense of protection of not being deported. The Supreme Court also shut down the Trump administration appeal regarding California's sanctuary status and left in place a lower court ruling that upheld most of the three laws in California that limit cooperation with federal immigration enforcement authorities. Supreme Court said, hey, that's California's rule, then that's California's rule. Now, the issue of qualified immunity, which is something that has been up a lot as a result of all these racial injustice protests, qualified immunity is the thing that the Supreme Court did grant to police officers and other public employees that limits them being able to be sued even when they have done something egregious and lost their job because they beat the crap out of somebody. The Supreme Court refused to reconsider a case about qualified immunity in their new term, which will start in October. And there are other cases up there that they may decide to hear when they get enough cases to think that it's appropriate for them to finally really deal with qualified immunity. But for now, unless Congress does something about it in whatever bills they're going to pass about rethinking how we do policing, that's still something that hasn't changed. Now, in the Justice Department, since Barr took over, it is a bit concerning how many long-time people who work in the Justice Department are leaving. Just this past week, three top officials at the Justice Department stepped down. A man who was previously the chief of staff when Jeff Sessions was the attorney general. Another guy who was the head of the Justice Department's criminal division is stepping down. The Solicitor General is planning to leave, and he's the guy who represents the administration in front of the Supreme Court. He's the one who's been up there arguing several of these cases that the administration has lost, and it's not just because he's not a good lawyer. So many lawyers in the Justice Department have left or asked to be reassigned that it's really causing a problem within the department. Bill Barr is not running a good ship, and a lot of the people who have been working as nonpartisan employees of the government trying to do their best possible work for us, they're leaving because they just can't work under these circumstances. What would you do? Would you stay and try and influence, or would you get the hell out? This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, and you are listening to iHub Radio.
because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I want to share something with you that I'm not a big fan of economics. I just have never quite understood economics other than in the most basic sense. But I do understand competitiveness. I'm as competitive as anybody you'll ever meet. And I do support the competitive system that we have in this country. You know, our economy is built on free enterprise and competition. Now, I do think there should be a floor below which no one can fall, but I'm a believer in the American system within limits. But meanwhile, this was very concerning to me. There's an organization, an international organization that actually has Swiss roots and global reach, and it was founded like 75 years ago, called the Institute for Management Development. And they do something called the World Competitiveness Ranking every year. And in 2020, even with this president who keeps hawking the fact that he built the best economy ever in history, we have plummeted from third place to 10th place in the international competitiveness rankings for 2020. They rank 63 different countries. And we have now fallen behind Canada, behind Denmark, and behind Sweden. These annual rankings by this IMD, Institute of Management Development, they measure global economies and their ability to generate prosperity. Now, for what it's worth, we were in the first spot in 2018. We fell to third in 2019, and now we're 10th. The center said that trade wars were a key factor in reversing our positive growth. And they list things like gross fixed capital formation, real growth, which means our investment in infrastructure, in schools, in land improvements, things that keep the economy moving. And they said those things were the top criteria resulting in our decline in rankings. Guess who's in the top spot for the second year in a row? Singapore, number one competitiveness nation of the 63 countries that were ranked. Now, I've got a couple things here that are things that you might not know if you didn't listen to this show. AMC theaters are planning to reopen so that we can go to the movies, I assume with some degree of spacing so people aren't sitting right next to each other, but I don't know. I will say this, when AMC theaters reopen next month in July, an executive, Adam Aaron, said, "We don't want to be drawn into a political controversy, so they won't require masks." When did wearing a mask become a political controversy? Oh yeah, I remember now. When the president made it political. Now I have something else I want to share with you. Again, this is one of those things where I read this and my mouth dropped open. You know what eBay is? It's that online bidding auction kind of site. Several senior eBay executives started a cyber stalking campaign against a couple who ran an e-commerce newsletter that was critical of eBay. And you know, there are all these rating services that have their own websites, and you can tune in and it'll tell you which movies are rated well, or it'll tell you which stores or which online merchants that you buy from are rated well. All these rating things. Well, this couple ran an e-commerce newsletter, and they were critical of eBay. So these senior eBay executives mounted this cyber stalking campaign against this couple, including tactics where they mailed them live cockroaches and a funeral wreath. Now, I didn't see when I was reading this article whether or not those key eBay executives were fired for this, but they certainly should have been. Okay, I want to remind you again, this is my last live show at this time on iHub Radio. We are going all podcast, which means you can listen to me in shorter blurbs with updated podcasts every week dealing with new current issues. And it just means you either go to the homepage for iHub Radio, scroll down the right side till you see my show, click on that, and you can find the podcast. Or wherever you access podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, you just go and go to that site where you get your podcasts and search for iHub Radio, a space in between the two words, small letter I, iHub space radio. And what'll come up is a list of all of our shows, and you just scroll down till you find the Anita Rufus Show. It won't say Lovable Liberal, but it will say the Anita Rufus Show, and every episode that we have on podcast will be listed, and you can find them and listen at your convenience. Now, I want to end the show today by going over a list of some of the accomplishments of the Obama administration, because I am sick and tired of hearing this president talk about how Obama didn't do this and Obama didn't do that. So here is a list of the things that President Obama did during his two terms and what Trump is either trying to undo or to claim credit for. For one thing, Obama averted a total economic depression. We were in a deep recession. He had the longest streak of job growth on record, with over 11 million new jobs created. 20 more million Americans got health insurance. The deficit was cut by over $800 billion. Our exports were up by 28%. Corporate profits went up 144%. The stock market nearly tripled. The American auto industry was saved. Reform on Wall Street was enacted, which this president is trying to overturn. Graduation rates from schools were at an all-time high. Reliance on foreign oil was at a 40-year low. We had no child left behind replaced. Pell grants doubled.